ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of the Politics Now podcast. And navigating what our rapidly changing world means can be tricky.
There's an argument that there's still a lot of uncertainty, isn't there, around the drivers of the global energy market?
That's why I'm joined by the sharpest political minds at the ABC to break down what each development means for Australia and how the government is positioning.
The Prime Minister's keeping his options open. He can increase that reduction or he can take it away altogether and go back to the system that where it was before the war started.
That's Politics Now with me, Patricia Carvelis. Find it on ABC Listen.
The Background Briefing team are working hard on fresh episodes. In the meantime, we've collaborated with ABC Long Reads to bring you some of the best pieces of journalism read by the people who've written them.
Hey there. Madison Connaughton here from ABC's Background Briefing. Last year, I decided to look into the disappearance of 8-year-old Eloise Woolidge, a case that's haunted Melbourne suburbs for decades. Over months of reporting, I found the story was far more complex than I realised. This is part two of my piece for ABC's Long Read, called The Girl Who Vanished from Her Bed. At the end of part one, forensic examiner Jeff Lacuda made a discovery that Eloise likely hadn't been taken through her bedroom window. Instead, she was carried out the front door of her family home. This upended the case. Lacuda's finding swung even more intense focus onto Eloise's parents, Patsy and Lindsay, and their social circle. Salacious rumours swirled that Patsy and Lindsay were swingers, something friends say wasn't really the case. But it did emerge that Patsy had been having an affair for months with an associate of Lindsay's, a man named Noel Anthony. Many in Patsy's sprawling friendship circle were questioned. Police quizzed Patsy's sister Margie on her relationships with men, her friendship with Lindsay, and asked her straight out if the two of them had taken Eloise. "I didn't have a problem saying no, I hadn't done it," Margie says. "I didn't get shirty about it at all. It just seemed to me strange. I think they were genuinely looking and didn't really have anyone in mind." Jane Mervis, Patsy's best friend and neighbour, remembers being driven into police headquarters in Melbourne for an interview. "There was another friend, myself and Patsy, were all taken into Russell Street and questioned," she says. She recalls police telling them, separately, that the others had confessed, just to see their reaction. "We actually heard Patsy screaming, literally screaming," Jane says, saying, "Really, don't be so ridiculous." The police later placed Patsy and Jane in a room together, secretly recording them. But once alone, all they did was complain about the police's manner and puzzle over the facts of the case. By February 1976, just a few weeks after Eloise disappeared, police were left with only a handful of leads that went nowhere. Among them, multiple sightings of young men acting strangely around the Woolidge home on the night of Eloise's disappearance, and of a suspicious green 1966 Holden station wagon that was seen on the street. Also, the sound of a car door slamming around 2 a.m. on January 13, reported by two separate neighbours mere metres from the Woolidge house. One was also sure she heard a child cry out at the same time. Just over a month after Eloise's disappearance, the investigating task force was disbanded. The detective in charge told the media, "We have exhausted all the avenues open to us, and there are more pressing problems to deal with." The circus moved on, and eventually the public did too. While locals say this case was an end of a sort of innocence, of unlocked doors and kids playing in the street until dusk, the reality is that, to most, Eloise became a ghost story. It was her family who was left to reckon with the reality of her loss. How to continue to live in the wake of something so shattering. There's a photo of Patsy in April 1976 from an interview she did with the Australian Women's Weekly. In it, she's sitting on Eloise's bed. The sheets are still stripped for forensic testing. She looks like the survivor of some terrible accident, dazed amidst the wreckage. "My main fear is that people will forget," Patsy told the magazine. "If they do, Ella will never be found." Lindsay and Patsy separated officially in the months after Eloise disappeared. Both went on to marry other people. They faced another shared tragedy 2 decades later when their son, Blake, was killed in a car accident. Lindsay died in 2017 and Patsy a few years later in 2022. She told reporters before she passed that she'd been able to find some sense of peace with Eloise's loss. For a long time after Eloise vanished, her aunt Margie says that she felt she couldn't even move house. "Because if I wasn't there, she wouldn't know where I was," Margie says. "And so I stayed there, and I stayed there, and I stayed there, because I thought, if she comes here, then I'll be there." Years passed, decades, without any word. Until in 2021, news broke of shocking crimes committed at Beaumaris Primary School, where Eloise had been a student when she disappeared. ABC reporter Russell Jackson uncovered that no less than 4 teachers at the school had sexually abused students throughout the 1970s. Rather than being stopped by authorities, these men were moved around the Victorian education system. Immediately, locals wondered if there might be some connection with Eloise's disappearance. They point out that one of the most high-profile victims, footballer Rod Owen, was in Eloise's year at school. The school wasn't an angle that was ever canvassed in the original investigation. Former detective John Bodinar says that, to his knowledge, police in Beaumaris didn't know about these teachers when he was working in the area, despite the fact that parents had complained about some of them to the school. There was no hint of any of these pedophiles at the local school, Bodinar says. He adds, "It is certainly relevant, given that it transpired at the time of Eloise's disappearance." A state inquiry set up to examine the school abuse did briefly broach the question of Eloise Wallage, but it reported that the information presented, quote, "did not reveal any connection between Eloise's disappearance and the matters within the scope of the terms of reference." David McGregor, one of the abusive teachers eyed by the Beaumaris inquiry, was interviewed by police during a reinvestigation of the Eloise Wallage case in the early 2000s. A friend of his, another local man named Alistair Webster, who ran Beaumaris's junior soccer club, was also interviewed. A parent at Beaumaris Primary, Webster had a significant rap sheet, which included sexual abuse. Patsy Wallage's friend Rob Walton knew both McGregor and Webster through the junior soccer club, and he says he was shocked to learn of their crimes. The two men, he says, were poles apart as personalities. McGregor was the original mild-mannered Mr. King, Walton says. He remembers McGregor carting all the soccer equipment to and from practice. And he was very personable and not very forthcoming, Walton says. Webster, on the other hand, was a stern Scotsman, a football obsessive. The reinvestigation did not find any evidence linking these men to Eloise Woolidge's disappearance. In fact, it didn't yield any new leads at all. And in 2003, a coroner ruled that Eloise had likely died, but couldn't make any findings about what happened to her. For Margie, the question of whether Eloise's disappearance could be linked to her primary school is a difficult one to consider. She's found herself turning over memories, trying to pinpoint whether there was any change in Eloise's behaviour before she disappeared. Even small things, like her niece's habit of biting her nails, can seem like a clue that something was wrong. "I used to joke about it," Margie says. "Say, give me a taste, you know, give me a nibble. You'd have a laugh about it." But really, she says, there's nothing that stands out. Yet she does believe that police need to look more seriously at Beaumaris Primary School. Whether there is any connection to Eloise's disappearance, even if it's painful territory. "This is part of the picture, and we cannot not think about it," Margie says. "We have to investigate it. I've got to think down those lines now. We can't just dismiss it," she says. "It was happening at the school." As the 50th anniversary of Eloise Woolidge's disappearance approaches, Margie is busying herself with memorial planning. She wants to have the service at Beaumaris Beach, where she last remembers spending a lazy, sunny afternoon with Eloise just before that fateful night. The memorial will be the first time she's ever formally marked her niece's disappearance. The grief has almost been held in suspended animation. By now, though, the little girl would have been nearing 60. She would have lived a whole life. Margie stumbles a little, thinking of what she wishes she could tell Eloise. "I still love her," she says eventually, "and that I'm sorry we weren't able to find her." Meanwhile, there has been some movement on her other goal, to spur Victoria Police into reanimating this investigation. In December, she had her meeting with the missing persons squad to talk about Eloise's case. There, a detective told her something that shocked her. He said that they've come to the conclusion that Patsy and Lindsay were not involved, Margie says, which is pretty monumental. But in the wake of this revelation, one question is thrown into even sharper relief. If not Eloise's parents, then who? Victoria Police say the investigation into Eloise's disappearance remains active and ongoing, and they confirm no evidence implicating Patsy or Lindsay Woolidge in the crime has ever been found. Margie says she wants the police to raise the reward for information about Eloise's disappearance. It sat at $10,000 since it was first offered in 1976. She thinks that something like that could draw out people who have information that hasn't yet surfaced. Someone who might have been thinking for a while now, you know, "I've been thinking about this, oh, I didn't bother telling you, it's only so small," Margie says. There may be pieces of the jigsaw puzzle they might be able to fit together. A Victoria Police spokesperson told the ABC that every case is different, and therefore every reward strategy is different. "Often we only get one chance to announce a reward, and so we have to ensure we make the best use of that announcement." The spokesperson added, "Each case is assessed on its merits, and it is our utmost desire in every case to get the information we need to solve it." They added that police remain hopeful that this case can be solved if the right information would come to light. This is Margie's hope too, that there is still someone alive who knows the full truth of what happened to her niece, and that finally, they are willing to tell it. After this story was first published, Victoria Police raised the reward for information that leads to the solving of this crime or the discovery of Eloise Wallage's body to $1 million. Police have urged anyone with information to contact Crime Stoppers.